Here it is. Place been made. Kick to the upright. And it is good! It is good! It is good! Mason Crosby has done it again! 51-yard walk-off field goal to win it for the Packers.
Sometimes the difference between a beautiful dream and a brutal nightmare is 37 seconds. Because that's how long it took for Aaron Rodgers to drive down the field, snatch victory from the jawline of Jimmy Garoppolo, and laugh at everybody who left him for dead. And that wasn't the only dramatic payoff of Week 3. So today, ESPN Daily's Monday morning quarterback Alex Smith takes us inside the film room and tells us what he saw that we didn't across a wild week in the NFL. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, September 27th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. So, Alex Smith, it is 11:46 p.m. Eastern time. We just watched Aaron Rodgers do the thing he's been doing his entire career, basically. I'm curious, when you watched the guy who you got drafted about 5 hours infamously ahead of in 2005, like, what went through your brain watching him do that?
Well, man, I mean, I've watched Aaron do some amazing things. He can do stuff with the football that I don't think anybody has ever done.
Alex Smith played 16 seasons at quarterback in the NFL, and now he's lucky enough to stay up late with us.
But I'm not going to lie, when he got the ball, when the Niners scored that touchdown, I thought the game was over. I mean, I thought the Niners stole that game. 37 seconds with no timeouts. I mean, that's a ridiculous task. And he did it, and he did it. It looked pretty effortless. It was amazing, amazing situational football to play like that. He's so dialed in all the time, and the bigger the moments get, it doesn't change Aaron. He's the same guy he always is, cutting it loose. So that was a lot of fun. I know that meant a lot to him to do that on national TV with everything that had gone on, and even week one, you know, even in the interview post game, I know he's talking about celebrating on the plane. I'm sure he's going to, and good for him. And to go on the road, a lot of the doubters wondering if all the noise that Aaron created this offseason was going to kind of tear this team apart. Wins like that definitely bring you together and can do a lot for you momentum-wise going forward.
But the ease of it, Alex, that you alluded to, I mean, we watched the 49ers drive down the field, march down the field methodically, Kyle Juszczyk getting that touchdown pass from Jimmy Garoppolo, looking like they were going to win this thing. And then just the flash of lightning that is Aaron Rodgers' arm hitting Davante Adams.
Snap, Rodgers looking, throws it. Davante's got it, and he falls to the ground inside the 35 or the 33-yard line.
How does Aaron Rodgers do this? I guess as a quarterback, as his peer, what I'm asking you to tell me is, how different is he? How does he do this in a way that makes even people who do his job marvel in the way that you are marveling?
Aaron is, I mean, I think it's such a combination of different things. First off, I mean, from an arm talent perspective, he's in a class of his own, up there with the greats. And I think his ability to change arm angles, to throw from any kind of platform, jumping in the air, moving sideways, he can make every throw on the field. And it was on display tonight, especially there at the end, laying that ball down over the middle, over the linebacker's head, perfectly for Davante Adams. I mean, it was obviously huge, huge play there, drive going. And then I think a big part of it's just mental. You have to be able to process as a quarterback. No great quarterback, I don't care how talented you are, it doesn't come without processing quick, anticipating. So much of it is playing with your mind, playing fast. And for Aaron, he's got the best of both. It is artistic when he's doing it. There is something about it that is so creative and fun to watch. He is kind of in a class of his own in that regard.
Yeah, look, so Jimmy Garoppolo on the other end of things, man, like, this would have been the two of us marveling at him if Aaron Rodgers did not just do the things that you just described, if he did not have the artistry that he just displayed. What did you make of Jimmy G?
Guy, I thought he played tough. Yeah, it wasn't a pretty first half. You know, he had the interception. They weren't getting much of anything going offensively. Couldn't get into a rhythm. I thought it was an incredibly gutsy call right before halftime by Kyle, sending Trey out there, and it worked out. I mean, that if that goes wrong, that's a huge play in the game, and I thought it was incredibly gutsy to go do that, to roll the dice, and it got him right back in it. And then they got the ball to start the second half. And then I thought Jimmy played incredibly tough and gutsy in the second half. A lot of the pockets weren't clean. He stood in there all day. A bunch of big third down throws there in the fourth quarter. And, I mean, it looked like it could be one of those drives, especially that two-minute drive to take him down and win it, that this could be kind of a signature drive to get Jimmy over the hump. I think he'd shown flashes and had done this. And here on a huge stage, comes back, beats Aaron, and man, he left just a few too many seconds on the clock.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo, that they snap the ball with 12 seconds about left in the play clock instead of letting it run a bit more on that touchdown pass to Kyle Juszczyk.
Garoppolo back. Garoppolo throws over the middle. Caught by Kyle Juszczyk. He'll dive into the end zone. Touchdown!
Did that stick out to you at the time? Are we sort of splitting hairs here? What's your sense of that as someone who has had to make calls like that with the clock running down and maybe leaving too much time?
I thought they handled it about as good as you could handle it. You know, to have three timeouts sitting in your back pocket and not using them, I think showed a lot of patience. They knew what they were doing. They knew where they were at on the field, the situation. They knew who was obviously standing on the other sideline across from them. And I thought they handled it really, really. I mean, it was a first down pass. You're not anticipating maybe that you're going to score right there. It may take a couple more downs. It may take a defensive pass interference and resetting the downs. I mean, sometimes those drives are more than three plays down there, you know, with defensive pass interferences and holdings and holding calls. So I thought they handled it really, really well. Aaron was too good on the other side.
Yeah, I want to switch now to the Rams-Bucks game, Alex, because that was another matchup of two quarterbacks that we've all been watching for years and years, and particularly in Matthew Stafford, man, a guy who has been playing, toiling in relative obscurity despite being a star in Detroit. And so it makes it kind of tough for the average fan to suss out, okay, how good is he really? So in your opinion, given the clear eyes of a guy who's done this job, what did tonight tell you about Matthew Stafford coming off a victory against Tom Brady and the Bucks? How good Stafford really is?
I think it was a big statement for Sean McVay, for the entire organization, and the move they made. A bold move to trade away Jared Goff and go get Matthew, to trade away first-round picks for him, to kind of mortgage a little bit of their draft future. And like you said, for Matthew, I think for people that are in the game know how talented he is and has been, and kind of stuck in Detroit, not a lot of great pieces around him, and I don't know how many head coaches he had there during his time, but a guy that was really, really gifted, you know. And so here, could he put it together? Could he, you know, with a more stable environment, with a running game, with some good players around him, a great defense on the other side of the ball, what was that going to look like? And this was kind of his first time to showcase it on national TV. Super Bowl champs coming to town. And they delivered.
Stafford keeps his Rams at the line. Third down and 10. Well protected. Steps up. Launches deep down the right numbers. All alone. DeSean Jackson over the shoulder at the 30. He weaves his way to the end zone. Touchdown LA. 75 yards.
To go out and play like that on that biggest stage. Again, it felt like a playoff game. You know, hopefully we'll get to see a rematch down the line potentially. But they delivered, and Matthew played great. And he did what I think he was brought there to do, drop back and throw the football, you know, put on a show and out-dueled a Bucks offense that's been playing at a really high level, you know, obviously going back to last season and the start of this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, Sean McVay on the sideline, Alex, I was watching him celebrate like this was the NFC Championship
yes,
game.
Yes.
Certainly, it's the thing that we expect to occur again come NFC title game time. But if you're the Bucks here, how should you be feeling about a matchup coming up maybe again in January?
I think they'll flush this. I mean, they have a beat up secondary. Two of their best cover guys are out. They still put up a ton of yards, move the ball up and down the field. I think they outgained the Rams as well, which is crazy. I think they stalled out a little bit in the red zone. They missed a field goal. So there were some opportunities there. I mean, this wasn't – I think the score looked a little worse than it was. I mean, I think if a few plays went differently, this was a much closer game. But that's the nature of the NFL, right, in these big situations, especially down there in the red zone in a game like that, back and forth. I think the Bucs still looked like the Bucs. I think they need to figure out on defense their identity, who they're going to be on that side of the ball. But offensively, they looked like the juggernaut that they are.
All right, Alex, after the break, I want to dig into the rest of the action in the AFC and also the greatest doink I think we've ever seen.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Alex, to get into the earlier games here, I want to pick your brain first about what we saw in Kansas City between your other former team, the Chiefs, and the Chargers, because the Chargers go for the throat, man, with the game tied less than 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And they pull this thing off, 30-26. They beat the Chiefs by. So I just want to unpack this with you in order, because that sequence, man, what were you thinking when Patrick Mahomes got picked on that deep throw to Travis Kelce?
Rolling out, looking for options. Throws it off his back foot, and it's intercepted!
Giving the Chargers the ball back with like 1 minute and 55 seconds left there.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a force. You know, I thought that the Chiefs and Patrick have, I feel like they've become so accustomed to, well, they can be down 14 or 17 and no sweat, come back and make the plays down the line to win the game. And in that situation, I just like with tie, they were losing. It wasn't necessarily the situation to have to force it. Punting wasn't the end of the world there. In that situation, 24-24, there, you know, I think if you had to do it over again, obviously, yeah. I mean, I think an incompletion in that situation isn't the end of the world. You know, there's still time on the clock, potentially, and there's still overtime.
Yeah, it felt like the curse of talent almost. Like, hey, we could do the Aaron Rodgers thing. We could do the Mahomes thing. So why don't we try to do that? Yep. And obviously, it's not going to happen every time. But
yeah, run the touchdown play, you know?
Hey. Yes, let's do the play where we win. Let's do that thing.
Exactly.
Yes. But on the other side, I mean, what the Chargers did was run the play where they go for it and they win. I mean, Alex, it's 4th and 4, right? And then it's 4th and 9 after a penalty, 48 seconds left, because there's that false start. The Chargers still decide to go for it. And what does that tell you about how this Chargers team is trying to live their lives here?
I thought it was incredibly gutsy. I mean, 4th and 4, I kind of understood Brandon Staley was thinking, and then when they got the false start and they go back to 4th and 9, I couldn't believe that they left the offense back out there. But I think in hindsight, you know, their kicker had already missed an extra point earlier in the game. And I think if he's going to go down, he's going to go down with his guys that got him there. The guys that I think the heart of the team that have been playing at a crazy high level this season thus far, Justin Herbert, those wideouts are all playing absurd right now. And it didn't let him down. Now, the defensive PI call they got on the 4th and 9 was a bit questionable, but doesn't matter at this point. They got the W, and I think there's something to be said there about, again, playing to your team's strengths, and I think he did that. He left his guys out there that he trusts to make a play, and they delivered.
Yeah, Justin Herbert throws the touchdown pass, the game winner to Mike Williams.
Herbert to throw toward the end zone. Mike Williams caught, touchdown, Chargers!
The extra point gets missed, but none of that matters because Mahomes, he tries for 4 deep throws, all of them incomplete, and the game ends, and Kansas City now, Alex, is shockingly, truly shockingly, 1-2. And so, you know, these coaches, you know, this organization, Andy Reid, we got reports about him being dehydrated, maybe having heart palpitations. He seems to be stable now. So we'll leave that to the side. Although obviously that is ongoing concern, I'm sure, for you personally, but you know, this staff, what's not working right now for the Chiefs, having seen these games and watched them really closely from afar now?
I mean, two things I think jump out to me. First off, I've been in that locker room before. I've been in there when they were 1-5 and still managed to win 10 or 11 straight games and a playoff game. And I can tell you there is not any panic. Andy Reid is the antithesis of that. I mean, he is so unwavering in situations like this. When faced with adversity, with tough times, he's not a guy that's going to overreact. I think the biggest thing that from a spectator standpoint that worries me is the defense. You know, I think they're the worst red zone defense. I don't even think they've held an opponent to a field goal yet. They're giving up touchdowns. Like, you know,
they entered this week, Alex, dead last in allowing yards per play, which is just, you know, that's unsustainable. If you're going to win a Super Bowl, it feels like.
Yeah, it is. And I think people realize that they're going to put up points on offense. They're going to put up yards, and that's going to be how they're going to win some games. But that defensive unit needs to be better. They need to be better in the red zone. They need to be better in some of the short yardage, third down stuff. They need to be more opportunistic in creating some turnovers here and there. And I think that can be the difference. I think that's something to keep an eye on going forward.
So if the Chiefs' problem is not their offense, I want to turn to a team whose problem is definitely their offense. Because the Chicago Bears, man, they play another AFC contender in the Cleveland Browns. And the Bears' offense, I mean, this is a stat that is just a thing that I thought was fake when I first saw it, but they were held to 47 yards total on the entire day. And this is, of course, the grand debut of Justin Fields, their star rookie ostensible franchise quarterback. And he gets sacked 9 times, man. So what do you think watching a game like that?
I felt bad for Justin just from, you know, to be a top pick and it's his first time playing and then have to go play in that kind of situation. And I think having watched it, I think maybe especially a lot of these Bear fans that have been calling for Justin Fields to play from day one can maybe appreciate what Coach Nagy was trying to do. And I think protect him a little bit, that this situation is not ideal for a young player to come into and develop. It's hard to develop when you're getting sacked 9 times. In situations like that, you can develop bad habits. You can develop scar tissue as a young quarterback, self-doubt, bad footwork in the pocket when you're getting hit that much and your protection is that bad. So I felt bad for him.
Alex, when you mentioned scar tissue, when you mentioned bad habits that can last, how serious is that? Because I think that comes off as both a warning and also as something that maybe people need to understand a little bit more deeply, because you're talking about something that can potentially ruin a guy is what it sounds like.
I think you can. I mean, for me personally, I think back to when I, you know, playing as a rookie quarterback, I feel like I absolutely dug myself a huge hole and it took me years to get out of it. You know, I think these guys are incredibly prideful and, you know, I think you start throwing around, you know, bust or any of these things and it can become something that, yeah, all of a sudden now these guys are consumed with what people are thinking about them. It's hard to have an understanding of how hard these situations are for these guys to be in, to go out there and trying to have success. And I think watching the Bears today was a great example of that.
So I want to go to what the Ravens are doing now, Alex, because man, after that week one, you figure this team feels like maybe they're just going to be doomed. Like you lose twice in a single night against the Raiders on Monday Night Football. But now what the Ravens have done in these last couple weeks, I mean, let's dive in against what they did to Detroit. And I feel bad for Detroit, man. Detroit feels like the Lions fans must feel like they're just living in a Final Destination movie at this point. Like, how is this going to go wrong for us? Because Lamar Jackson throws a terrible interception with about 5 minutes left.
Jackson to throw out of the gun. Drifting to his right, under pressure, slings it, looking for Sammy Watkins. It's intercepted at the 20-yard line.
They get the ball back to Detroit, and the Lions take the lead late. Baltimore gets the ball back and then ends up with 4th-and-19 from their own 16-yard line with about a minute left. And somehow, Lamar Jackson converts that through the air.
Jackson with time, steps up in the pocket, looking. Now he throws. He's got a man open. Sammy Watkins has it midfield, and he slides down at the 47-yard line.
So just on that play in particular, as a quarterback, what do you even say in the huddle before a 4th-and-19 throw with the game on the line like that?
I mean, in some ways, like the 4th-and-19s, I mean, you got – everybody's putting it out there, right? You got nothing to lose. It's 4th-and-19. So in some ways that situation's freeing as a player, right? You got to go make the play. You're certainly not worried about making a mistake in that situation. So a little bit, everybody out there, there's some definitely improvisation going on. There's not many plays you have in the playbook for 4th-and-19. So a lot of times in the huddle, there's a little backyard to it. You know, hey, we got to get the sticks here. Hey, I want you to run. Can you run it at this depth? You know, run this, that. I think the thing that stood out to me is the Lions all day, especially the three downs before that, they sacked Lamar twice with four-man rushes and were getting after him and having a ton of success. And then 4th-and-19, they went to the old prevent defense, you know, in a three-man rush. And Lamar, you know, had a bunch of time back there, ran around, and it's hard to cover for that long. And he made a great throw. It was a huge play in the game, but for me going in, it was a little bit like even the Sunday night game. Like, I'm not sure in those situations, sometimes it's better to keep playing how you're playing. But they went to the three-man rush and Lamar made him pay.
And so Lamar Jackson makes his throw. It's a 48-yarder to Sammy Watkins to set up Justin Tucker, who is setting up to take the longest field goal in NFL history for the win. So when you were watching a 66-yarder get launched into space, how are you feeling? What were you thinking?
My only thought was, if there's one guy that can do this, it's Justin Tucker.
A 66-yard try. Tucker's kick is on the way. It is good! Crossbar, and it tumbles through. It is good! Time has expired. Justin Tucker with the longest field goal in NFL history.
I mean, that was it. I mean, that if there's a guy that has a chance, they're in a dome. I mean, and what an opportunity to let him do it. And then he hits it off the crossbar and it bounces through. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't imagine what that feels like for a kicker to hit a walk-off 66-yard NFL record. Like, when you're a kid in, you know, for me as a quarterback, you know, and you're doing the situations in the backyard, and you're like, it's 4th-and-10, you know, down by 6, got to run around and throw a touchdown. Well, if you're a kicker, I don't understand. That's what you're, you know, hey, you know, 3 seconds left. We're kicking from my own 45. I mean, and then he hits it. It was incredible.
But hold on. Did you see that clip, by the way, of Justin Tucker singing opera?
I did.
Because this whole thing. Oh, Alex.
I know he's a bit eccentric, but I didn't know he sings opera.
It was unfair. It felt unfair because if his leg can do that, his lungs should not be able to do this. So I guess because he is an operatic veteran, he is an operatic kicker. I'm just curious. This is when I ask you, Alex Smith, if you have any hidden talents like that.
Nothing as impressive as, you know, singing opera. I'm good at crosswords, Pablo. Is that a talent?
Crosswords, Alex Smith, and podcasting are two talents that you should be very, very proud of having.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I appreciate you staying up late with us, man. Thanks again. Yeah,
thanks, Pablo, as always.
All right, up next, a phone call to Lewis Riddick to discuss the hatred and the glory of Eagles Cowboys.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So there is a single game left in week three, and with the Eagles and the Cowboys both 1-1 heading into Monday Night Football, we had to call our man in the booth. So Lewis Riddick, where are we catching you right now, man? Where are you at?
I'm at the Lowe's, live by Lowe's or Lowe's by live, something like that. I'm in Arlington, Texas. I'm looking out my window right now, and I'm staring at AT&T Stadium. It's a great view. The sun's setting. It's warm outside. There's people everywhere. Eagles fans everywhere. Music blasting downstairs by the pool. It's a pretty good scene here, man. Tomorrow night's going to be off the charts exciting tomorrow night for Monday night.
Yeah, man. Look, I mean, the idea that the sun is setting on the Cowboys stadium, it does lead me to ask the question about, like, how are Cowboys fans feeling right now? Because whenever we talk about their empire, Lewis, I tend to make fun of them and call them delusional, that the sun, in fact, has set decades ago. But here we have a team that obviously beat the Chargers by a last-second field goal. They lost by a last-second field goal to the Bucs. How do you see this team? What's the mood around it right now? As a team could be 0-2 or 2-0, basically.
Offensively, Pablo, they feel as though they can do whatever they want to do against whoever they play. They think they could run the ball down your throat, or they could throw the ball 50, 60 times with a franchise quarterback that now is getting his respect that they feel as though he should have gotten a long time ago in Dak Prescott. So they go into tomorrow night with supreme confidence that no matter what the Eagles do or any other team does, they have an answer for it because they think they're just that good on that side of the ball. Defensively, look, they're hobbled. They're missing at this point in time three starters on the defensive line that won't play tomorrow night. Mm. But they still feel, Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, feels that they will be able to do enough along the defensive line to hold down the fort until they're back at full strength. There's no doubt that Micah Parsons has kind of grabbed the attention of everyone who follows NFL football with his performance last week against the Chargers. And
yeah,
he's kind of like a prodigy in terms of his talent and his ability. He doesn't even know how good he is. I think this team deserves some respect. They deserve to be taken very seriously this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious, when you talk to these coaches and these players, as you do every week before Monday Night Football, Lewis, what stuck out to you from any of those meetings? What is the conversation you had that kind of has stuck in your mind that you're going to remember as you call this game?
Interesting. This is going to catch people off guard, and I'm going to talk about it tomorrow night, all right? I like talking to the guys who people have never really thought about before, never really heard of, and then all of a sudden, boom, they burst onto the scene and they become stars, all right? Last year, it happened to me with Brandon Staley.
Mm.
This year, another defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator for the Eagles. Super, super impressive. I would not be shocked to see this team put up a hell of a fight and this game come down to a last possession, and partly because of the fact that the defense rises up and does the thing that they need to do in order to keep the lid on one of the most explosive offenses and most explosive quarterbacks in the NFL. I think Jonathan Gannon can be a star in this league as a coach. And I'm just hoping his team and his side of the ball represents itself tomorrow night like I think they will and like they have so far this year.
Let's do a role-playing game here, Lewis. You're Jonathan Gannon. You're this prodigy that you really like. How do you try to stop Dak Prescott?
Yeah, I think you definitely try to make them go the long, difficult road to scoring points, meaning you protect from top down. You don't let Amari Cooper burn you for a 70-yarder. You don't let Tony Pollard get out of the backfield and just blow the game wide open. That's how you stay. You kind of make this game a long, difficult game for an explosive offense like this. So if I'm Philly, that's what I do. you make them go to long, difficult road and see if they'll make some mistakes and crack under pressure.
So the pressure that you refer to here, Lewis, it is Dak's first home game since his ankle injury that we all saw on TV. It was gruesome. But now you've described the scene where the city, the state, allegedly America, is buzzing about this team. So how do you think Dak handles this kind of a homecoming?
Dude, Dak Prescott is one of the coolest, calmest, most self-aware, humble, yet quietly cocky, confident people that I've talked to. And I know I'm the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, and I know what comes with that. And at the same time, I'm not too big to where I can't relate to someone who hasn't been as fortunate as him. He's the center point of the most popular sports franchise in the world, and everything begins with him. And all the things he's gone through help him deal with those kind of things. Because, look, if you can come back from what Dak has come back from his injury to the death of his brother, death of his mother, from the very beginnings of his NFL career where he was a running quarterback at Mississippi State to becoming one of the best, and he is one of the best top five passers in this league right now. Mm. And you know, Pablo, you're wired right. You know you're wired different. He just has a very, very calming air about him that puts you at ease and makes you even more confident, even if it doesn't involve playing on the football field. Just talking to him, you feel confident that, look, this is just going to be a good conversation because he doesn't try to hide anything. He's very real. Very cool, brother, man. Very, very cool. That's the first time I talked to him in person yesterday.
Yeah.
And you just walk out of there going, yeah, we need more like that. All of us need more like Dak Prescott.
So you've described somebody who is calm, who is confident, who is battle-tested in all sorts of senses, Lewis. I'm curious, when you look across the field then at Jalen Hurts, who everyone's still trying to get a real read on because he looked great in week one, looked pretty mediocre in week two. What is your sense of how the Eagles locker room feels about him? What do they need for him to do to beat the Cowboys tonight, to find success tonight?
With a quarterback like him who's still earning his stripes, number one way, obviously, to gain respect from your peers inside your own locker room is to have consistent, sustained success, to have it be a nice stair step ascension and not have it be just peaks, valleys, peaks, valleys, peaks, valleys. And I think that's what he needs to do. That means his lows can't get lower, but his highs need to get higher as he continues to ascend through this season. His coaching staff believes in him. They continue to try and build out the roster around him to support him in the way an NFL quarterback needs to be supported, both in terms of protection and playmakers. And, you know, Nick Sirianni, their head coach, has a good sense about him too and about where Jalen is now and where Jalen needs to go. So I think a lot of things are lined up for him. And people are very intrigued about the Dallas Cowboys, and people generally expect them to win this game. And for him to come out and play well and pull off the so-called upset, that's how he would continue to gain his stripes and gain his cred in that locker room.
So let's get to what's been the consistent thing about this entire matchup for decades now, Lewis, which is just hatred. It's dislike. It's the guy you just alluded to, Nick Sirianni, the head coach of the Eagles, wearing this beat Dallas shirt during a presser this week. I mean, you used to work for the Eagles. You've been inside of this rivalry.
Yeah.
And obviously on the line tonight is the idea that, hey, you will be in first place all by yourself in a division that has not featured back-to-back champions since, I think, the Eagles in like 2003-04. So tell me about just the enmity here. How real is that? How does all of that sort of add up over time?
Yeah, man, this goes back decades, back to when I was a kid growing up in Southeastern PA. Back then, you knew it was a big deal. And that was what was always on TV for me back then. And I knew since it was always on TV and John Madden was always doing the games that it was always meaningful when they played one another. And then when I started working there, it's an emotional week, man. When you drive up to the stadium, whether it's in Philadelphia or here in Dallas, and you see the fans and you see the different jerseys, you see the home team jerseys, away team jerseys, these fans are just barking and talking crap to each other early, early in the day. I mean, you go to Philly wearing a Dallas shirt, you know it's going to be on for the next 4 hours or however long you're in that stadium. You know, this season has just been very emotional anyway because of fans being back, and fans are just kind of letting loose everything that they couldn't let loose over the past year. It's going to be bonkers in that stadium. That's about 300 yards, 400 yards away from me right now.
Lewis Riddick, I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.